WNYC Studios is supported by Earth Justice. As a national legal nonprofit, Earth Justice has more than 200 full-time lawyers who fight for a healthy environment. They're challenging utilities to lower your power bill and fight climate change by helping communities achieve clean, affordable energy for all. From stopping new gas plants to helping advance the growth of rooftop solar, Earth Justice is accelerating the clean energy transition so we can all breathe easy. Visit earthjustice.org/power to learn more. That's earthjustice.org/power.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Axl Rose has an axe to grind. I'm John Schaefer, and coming up on Soundcheck, the Guns N' Roses frontman wants nothing to do with his band's induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this weekend. We'll find out why.
The Titanic shall not break, leave a lad running free, God knows.
This weekend also marks the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. We'll hear songs that were written after the disaster, like this one, God Moves on the Water. But first, a different look at God, or gods to be exact.
In my life on earth, the things I have invented have been...
On her new album, Dar Williams takes on some of today's headlines using the imagery of Greek mythology. She'll play live. All of that on Soundcheck after the news.
Set sugar, make it slow, and we come together fine. All we need is just a little patience.
Axl Rose, the mercurial frontman of this band, Guns N' Roses, picks a fight with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Not because they're keeping him out, but because they're trying to put him in. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, singer-songwriter Dar Williams visits with the gods of ancient Greece. A famous singer refuses to go to Rock's Mount Olympus. And a disaster of Titanic proportions still echoes in song 100 years later. That's an action-packed show for today. But we'll start with the 1,000-word letter posted yesterday on the LA Times website, addressed to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Guns N' Roses fans, and whom it may concern. Singer Axl Rose announced that he will not attend his band's induction into the Hall of Fame this Saturday in Cleveland. He added, "I strongly request that I not be inducted in absentia, and please know that no one is authorized, nor may anyone be permitted to accept any induction for me." Now, it's unusual for a musician to reject an honor like this one, but if anyone can explain the behavior of Axl Rose, it's our friend Chris Richards, pop music critic of The Washington Post. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm confused. What is going on here?
Well, looks like Axl doesn't want to be a part of the big show this weekend. Guns N' Roses have, if anybody doesn't remember this, they are credited with breathing new life into rock and roll back in 87 with their album Appetite for Destruction. The lineup at that time included the iconic guitar player Slash, Izzy Stradlin, bassist Duff McKagan, drummer Stephen Adler. It was this fantastic collection of individuals who and great players. And of course Axl Rose, the frontman himself, yes, and the leader of the group. They really won the hearts of America. They, in 1991, released a double album, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, which produced November Rain, which I would say is one of the greatest rock ballads ever. After that, riffs started to form within the band, and the tale kind of goes murky. There's a lot of fighting over the songwriting. Axl and Slash are arguing over who's in control, and by 1996, Slash left. McKagan and drummer at the time, Matt Sorum, followed, and then everything kind of starts to get a little crazier from there.
Mm-hmm. And Axl's own behavior over the course of the years, I mean, this is a guy who obsessed for over a decade on the album Chinese Democracy that eventually came out just a few years back. He writes, "The Hall of Fame induction ceremony doesn't appear to be somewhere I'm actually wanted or respected." Now, that's in the middle of a letter that, you know, says, you know, no, I don't mean any disrespect. I'm sure they had the best intentions. But then this line seems to come out of nowhere. What do you make of this letter?
I think that's a line that's probably directed to his bandmates, who he does, you know, address individually throughout the letter, except for one, which is Slash. So you have to maybe guess that the blood between the two of them has grown so toxic, things are just forever beyond repair. Mm. But that line jumped out to me as something that he's saying to his bandmates who have, you know, fought over the idea of a reunion before, and we've kind of had to glean these little hints in the press about what their intentions might be. But, yeah.
Now, Chris, you said that, you know, Slash and Axl Rose were sort of arguing over who ran the band. My understanding is Axl Rose actually owns the name Guns N' Roses. Is that right?
That's right, and that's why he continues to tour as Guns N' Roses with a new cast of musicians who, in my estimation, are nowhere near as good or as interesting as the classic lineup. I just saw them in the D.C. area back in February. It was literally one of the worst rock and roll shows I've seen in my life, if not the worst. It was It was horrid. I described it as a hostage situation, more than a concert. So, yes, but he does still own the name and is still touring behind it.
Well, so the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is supposed to induct Guns N' Roses with or without Axl Rose, and their response today is as follows: "We are sorry, Axl will not be able to accept his induction in person." What does that mean?
Sounds like the show must go on. you know, and I believe, you know, the cynic in me believes that they're probably loving this. This is drawing a huge amount of attention to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which, you know, definitely sparks the curiosity and interest of music fans across the country every year. But this is definitely a hot issue, and I'm sure that they're probably into this. The closest we've come to it before is with the Sex Pistols,
right?
Who have declined induction. They declined with a very colorfully worded, hand-scribbled letter that you can see on Wikipedia. I won't repeat that language on your friendly airwaves here.
Nope.
They did not, even though they did not attend the induction ceremony, they're still inducted as members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, whether they like it or not. So it seems like that's what's going to happen as well this weekend in Cleveland.
Well, when the Sex Pistols did it, I mean, that was the punk thing to do, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
just, we don't want to be in your stupid club. Axl Rose, you know, it's just, how long has this feud been simmering between him and the rest of the original lineup?
Well, it seems like it's been going ever since those Use Your Illusion albums came out and really changed everything. But in terms of, you know, you mentioning punk rock and sort of that defiant attitude, I think that's been part of, you know, the DNA of Guns N' Roses. They were definitely aware of punk rock, and I think they kind of had that rebel spirit at the beginning of the group. And it's what made them great in the first place. So in a lot of ways, this sort of reconnects Axl to his past, you know. This is like the first thing he's done in many, many years that reminds me of the defiant character that first sort of emerged back then. But it also reminds us that the music that he's making today does not have any of that. It sounds very sad and very sexless and not interesting to me what the current incarnation of Guns N' Roses is up to. So here we have this character who's been fascinating to us for all this time because he's very conflicted. It seems like he very much wants to be part of his legacy and wants to defy it at the same time. And I think you definitely see in that letter, which you had mentioned before, you know, the kind of contradictory nature of it, where he's trying to play nice and say that he appreciates it, but then, you know, throw some bombs too.
Well, you should read the letter, Soundcheck listeners, if you haven't already. It makes for fascinating reading, and you can find it on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Chris Richards is pop music critic for The Washington Post, and whether he likes it or not, Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses will be inducted Saturday into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Chris, thanks for catching us up to speed here.
Oh, thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Where do we go next? Singer-songwriter Dar Williams joins us in the studio to preview her new album called In the Time of Gods, and later, a sampling of some of the many songs inspired by the 1912 Titanic disaster. This is Soundcheck.
Silver skies with distant showers, my sister brought them.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singer-guitarist Dar Williams has built a reputation over the past 20 years for her keenly observed slice-of-life songs. They weren't always about her, but they were certainly about someone living in contemporary America. Now, though, she's mining the cast of ancient Greek mythology. In this song, the winged messenger Hermes finds himself in Dar Williams' country. And we'll hear what's behind Dar's new album, In the Time of Gods, in just a moment. But first, here's a song. Crystal Creek, featuring Bryn Roberts on keyboards and Dar Williams singing and playing guitar live on Soundcheck.
So fleet and youthful, must have split a thousand apples. Oh, I watched you as you steadied first your heart and then your breath, venturing out, skin a thousand blades of grass. And when you drew your bowstring, it was a swift and cordial death. As you stood in the wilderness, did you feel the silence? In the stillness, that was me.
Dar Williams and a song called Crystal Creek. You'll find it on her new album, In the Time of Gods. That's a live performance with Bryn Roberts at the piano. Dar Williams, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much.
So, In the Time of Gods, very contemporary tales. I mean, this is sort of an extension of the old murder ballad tradition, it sounds like, except there's this kind of reference to a character from Greek mythology in it.
Yeah, yeah. Also, and in this murder ballad, she killed he.
Mm-hmm. Who so, is she?
Well, in the myth, the goddess of the hunt is Artemis, and she sees this guy spying on her, and she turns him into a stag, who is killed by his own hunting party. Really cruel. I mean, kind of you know, it's symmetrical but cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually speaking with a hunter out where I live, you know, up north of here, and I said, you know, I'm writing this song about a hunter, and it seems like when you're a real hunter, you know, you really pride yourself on it. It's a real, you know, fraternity, sorority, in terms of, you know, the skill of hunting. And he said, oh, yes, you know, you look for the ground, you look for acorns, you look for tracks. And he really, and then I was remembering when I was up in Vermont once with a boyfriend, kind of a stout boyfriend. And I remember some guys coming out of a store with, you know, a six pack of beer in one hand and a something pack of ammunition in the other, looking at him like he was the, you know, a little less manly than they were. And I thought, you're not, this is, there's nothing macho about what you're doing. You're just going to get drunk and shoot at stuff. And so I suddenly was feeling that Artemis myth, this woman saying, I am the goddess of the hunt. I know the true hunters, and they understand something about all of nature, as opposed to, you know, these guys. And so it presented itself pretty quickly as a modern story.
Right. I wonder what Artemis would say if, say, you were out hunting and maybe shot your friend in the face and you were... Well, maybe a highly elected official.
Yeah, I shouldn't laugh at that. But yeah, that idea, you know, I was thinking there's something cruelty about the way that she, you know, doles out consequences for people who don't respect the balance of nature. So is colony collapse disorder. I mean, nature is cruel when you break the balance.
So what was behind the idea for... I mean, was it just one song and then you thought, maybe I could do another like this? Or was this kind of a concept you had... going out of the box?
No, yeah, that's a good question. I know I was up in Canada, and I was on this really desolate highway, and everything was silver. It was, you know, the first day of March or something, and the street was silver. The highway lamps were really huge, and I just thought, there's something very, it's like a biker opera set. There's something very mythic. And I thought, oh gosh, what if, you know, my favorite god growing up was the god of travelers and thieves and people who live by their wits, because that's what I am now, Hermes. And I thought, what if the biker was Hermes? And what if there's this woman and she just said, ugh, I give up, you know, I feel so unseen in the world, I'll just go to Hades, I'll just call Hermes. And what if he came and he said, I just think you're so sexy, you know, you're so worldly, we're going to ride on my bike, and you're not going to go to death today. I'm going to seduce you, you know. And so that suddenly came sort of as a full story with a melody and a lot of interesting ideas as I was driving to this gig. And then I thought, what if, you know, I took up these other things? Because they're seeming modern to me. And, you know, my first thought was, wow, my record company would not like that. And I've been with them for 15 years. So, you know, what do siblings do but the thing that annoys their sibling the most? So I thought, well, let's try it. And
so did you have to, like, go back and study to remind yourself who's who in the mythology?
No. You know, when you get it as a kid, you know, it's just, and then you get it in college, you know, those are two good times to absorb it. And my dad... and mom were really into reading us all sorts of different mythologies. And actually, I think my parents are listening right now. My dad, I think he's still the town historian of Newcastle. So he loves all history.
Mm.
And he really had a lot of reverence for the stories, you know, as really iconic. So no, I didn't have to do a thing.
Well, yeah, I had me working hard listening to the records, trying to figure, all right, that's somebody. Who is that?
That's great.
I Am the One Who Will Remember Everything is the next song. Who is this?
All right, this was a mistake. This is, I was... Hera is the queen of the gods.
Right.
And she's the goddess of marriage. And I thought, you know, I had something in my head for a long time, which was that after 9/11, they said that the Taliban was actually mainly comprised of orphans of the Russian-Afghani war. And so there are a lot of unparented children. And there's a lot of cruelty in the Taliban. And I thought, these kids were parented by texts, not by parents, you know, and by... their poverty. And so I'd always wanted to kind of address that. And I thought, I'll do Hera, the goddess of families, because, you know, she will be the fierce voice of motherhood. And I wrote the song, and somebody said, no, she hates children. She's the goddess of marriage.
I thought, oops.
Yeah, but there's got to be a goddess of you know, children out there somewhere. So maybe this is more a patron saint than a goddess.
All right, well, as a song, it doesn't, you know, I mean, you'll have to come up with a different backstory, I suppose.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I shouldn't tell all New York City about my big lie. Here we go.
Star Williams with Bryn Roberts at the piano. The album's called In the Time of Gods. This song is I Am the One Who Will Remember Everything.
Oh, out over here. Must be three or four, shaken out of the boot on its way back to war. And he's not looking for a father or a mother, just a 7-year-old brother on this smudge line border camp of refugees. I am the one who will remember everything. I am.
Once again, Dar Williams live on Soundcheck with Bryn Roberts playing keyboards and doing some backing vocals. I Am the One Who Will Remember Everything. That's the single from the new record In the Time of Gods, the latest from Dar Williams. The title, In the Time of Gods, and the songs on the record all suggesting that maybe the time of Hera and Artemis and Hermes is not just 2,000 years ago.
Right. Well, you know, that's better than the way you could look at it right now with the whole 2012 things, you know, coming up. You know, a lot of people treat this as kind of an end times time. And there is something kind of special about it. I think we're going to run out of, you know, liquid fuel in the next 10 years and lie about it for maybe 20. So we have some time. But, you know, I think things are going to change radically, and we're going to be asked to sort of stand up and you know, have acts of heroism and to live, you know, bravely in our lives. And I think in mythic times, you know, it was like, of course there's chaos. We created it. But that doesn't mean you let go of civilization.
Well, when you think of these old, you know, these Greek myths, I mean, this was a people 2,000 to 3,000 years ago trying to make sense of the world around them, trying to write stories to explain to themselves why things are the way they are.
Right. And what I've discovered in writing these songs is they're also deciding amongst themselves through many kind of rinse-throughs of oral history what to keep, you know, that no matter what you keep, you build edifices for justice. You know, you build big things with pillars, and you believe in civilization, and you do things to foster civilization. You know, back then you used to burn something. Now I guess you pay taxes. You know,
and then you start your car and you burn something else.
Right. You know? Exactly. That's a good point.
We're speaking with Dara Williams. She's got this album called In the Time of Gods, and a New York gig on May 5th at NYU's Skirball Center at 8 p.m., and playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Now, environmentalism has been an ongoing concern of yours, and you did a different kind of a tour last summer, right? You went through, like, a bunch of camps and planted bee gardens.
Yeah.
What's a bee garden?
It's, you know, a bee-friendly garden.
Bee-friendly. It's flowers that attract bees.
Yeah, it was so great, I have to say, because, you know, you'd start and you'd listen to 15 minutes of stories about where kids had been stung. And it was always the eye. It was always, you know, my eye was this big. And then we would get to this thing about how not only did the bees need our help right now, but they truly just need more forage, you know, like which is flowers. Mm-hmm. And that actually just planting a flower is part of the solution. You can blame it all on insecticides and the fact that we have lawns instead of gardens now and things like that. But really, just more flowers. And I could say that, you know, viscerally, you know, from my heart, as opposed to that kind of way that kids know that you're not really telling the truth. And we would plant them. And then we became, you know, we were courting the bees. Then we were sort of all on the same side trying to get bees to come to us. And by the end of planting these really beautiful gardens, because these flowers can't be assembled badly, even by me, who's more an ear person than an eye person, we would stand back and a little lazy bee would come around and land on the flowers and the kids would sort of cheer. And we would sort of see the world as this kind of magical place for bees where they could do their thing and make honey and make the world, you know, beautiful.
And it's something kids could do.
Yeah.
It's not like Earth is running out of, you know, fossil fuels. You kids need to grow up fast and solve this problem. It's like,
right,
plant a flower, help a bee.
Yeah, and it's even better also than the oatmeal container drum, you know, because that's, I wrote about this for the Huffington Post. That's a remediation, you know. Remediation's cool, but there's something about, it's almost like, you know, God's clockwork, getting a bee in, it's a spiral in and then spirals out and does sort of all sorts of wonderful processes.
Speaking with Dara Williams, the new album called "In the Time of God," "In the Time of Gods," using this imagery from ancient Greek mythology to kind of look at modern life, contemporary America, as Dara has done throughout the course of her career. You want to do "I Have Been Around the World"?
Yes, this is another one that I would have written no matter what. But there is a core. There's one god that doesn't sit on a throne. She sits in the middle of the gods and stokes the fire. And And I never had that touring for a long time. And I was like, I don't need it. You know, everything I eat comes in a wrapper. I have a latte for brunch. But now I have a home and a foodie husband and an awesome community. And I need it. So, I mean, it's amazing to have this sort of axis in my life. So so this is both ancient and very modern.
Will you make my coffee? And it's only 3 a.m., but soon going far away, and my time is almost up. I hold my coffee cup, we sit with nothing left to say, and I know that soon I will be touching down in a shining city or a mountain town. I have been around the world, but all that I can see are these moments that we have. You're all the world to me. Well, there's always laughter and the parties after and a fond farewell before I go, leaving town. The window panes, they flash like movie frames, the last scene in a picture show. But I know that I am not alone, and you are the one that I can tell my stories to. I have been around the world, there's so much there to see, and the story never ends. You're all the world to me. And I know there are times you think I've lost my way, but there is no way this can be true. 'Cause when I'm walking through the door, I look for you.
Dar Williams singing, playing guitar, Bryn Roberts playing the keyboards. The song's called I Have Been Around the World, live performance on Soundcheck. Dar Williams has been with us. And Dar, before we go, a quick suggestion from John in Annandale, New Jersey, who was hearing you talk about the second song, I Am the One Who Will Remember Everything,
yeah,
and mixing up the goddess Hera, the goddess of marriage as opposed to the goddess of
family.
He suggests, John suggests, make the narrator Hestia. She was a goddess of hearth and home. Hera, Hestia, works.
That last song was Hestia, but you know what? She can do double time.
Yeah.
Excellent suggestion.
All right, Dar Williams, the album's called In the Time of Gods. She'll be at NYU's Skirball Center May 5th at 8 p.m. Great to have you with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you so much.
May we grow better still. Storm King has seen us from above, rising up on the starboard bow. He knows the turning.
Up next, from Lead Belly to Celine Dion, the Titanic has inspired a whole lot of music in the past century. We'll listen in next on Soundcheck.
The Storm King has borne the seasons all, worn them up on his brow. He guides the watchful.
It was a midnight on the sea, the band is playing Jeremiah God today. About the Titanic, fairly well.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This Sunday, April 15th, marks the 100th anniversary of the Titanic disaster. A huge tragedy, to be sure, but also catnip for a century's worth of authors, playwrights, filmmakers, and songwriters. There are hundreds of Titanic tunes out there by people who are not Celine Dion, including this gem from the legendary bluesman Lead Belly. Joining me now on the line is Grammy-winning engineer Christopher King, who produced a compilation set called People Take Warning, a collection of disaster songs. Christopher, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Good. So why is there so much material out there to draw from when it comes to the Titanic?
Well, it seemed as if it was a multidimensional tragedy that could be used as a panacea for various ills, be them religious ills, societal ills, moral ills. And so people could take the Titanic and do anything they wanted to with it.
So you could see it as a kind of a social issue, you know, the poorer passengers who were in the steerage decks, below decks, not able to get out, you know, that sort of thing.
Right, yeah. There were songs that commented upon the disparity between, say, the first class and third class passengers. But then on the other hand, the songs which had more of a religious or moralistic content seemed to say that the rich and the poor and the young and the old all met the same fate.
Now, it happened April 15th, 1912. Your two CD set, People Take Warning, three CD set, begins in 1913. Did we start hearing Titanic songs that soon?
That was basically when the first Titanic songs emerged. The Elmo Rashamim, the Jewish prayer for the dead of the Titanic, was one of the first. There were a couple of European issues that were more along the lines of British moralistic tales, and they were called Be British. Step forward and save the ladies. But essentially, yes, that was the first U.S. recording.
So this is cantor Joseph Rosenblatt, recorded in 1913. That is cantor Joseph Rosenblatt and El Mole Rachmim, a song for a prayer for the dead of the Titanic, recorded and released in 1913. So that's going all the way back. Christopher King's on the line with me from Virginia, the Grammy-winning engineer and producer of People Take Warning, Murder Ballads and Disaster Songs, 1913 to 1938. We're talking about how many of those songs were inspired by the Titanic disaster. So, Christopher, let's pick up the social thread. I mean, you mentioned that there are multiple sort of layers of meaning that people could kind of read into the sinking of the Titanic. What about, you know, the idea of plain folk, you know, folks who were not rich, watching this disaster and seeing the disparity between who survived, you know, from the rich people above decks and those who didn't, who were in the cheap seats, so to speak?
Well, many of the rural artists commented upon that in their lyrics. Frank Hutchinson, Richard Rabbit Brown, the Dorsey Brothers, they all came from the perspective of the more lower class working rural musician that pointed out that it did not matter if you were wealthy or if you were well-statused or if you were among the poor in the carriage hold. Everybody met the similar fate, and everybody was being judged equally before God at that point.
Mm-hmm. But then you have William and Versy Smith and the song When That Great Ship Went Down, where they say, you know, the rich didn't want to ride with the poor, so they sent the poor below. They were the first that had to go.
Right.
That's a pretty pointed social commentary lurking in a folk song.
Right, right. And that is an anomaly there, because most of the religious commentators tended to see the rich and the poor and the old and the young as being on equal footing before God. And there was no notion of vindictiveness, which I guess is present there in the William and Versie Smith song.
This is from 1927, and it's called When That Great Ship Went Down. William and Versie Smith, When That Great Ship Went Down, 1927 song, a kind of a social moralizing take on the Titanic disaster, and very much from the point of view of people who were poor themselves, probably. We're speaking with Christopher King, who put together the box set People Take Warning, a collection of disaster songs from the years after the Titanic, 1913 to 1938. And as time goes on, Christopher, do we see some of these Titanic songs taking on a slightly more irreverent tone?
I'm not sure if I would call them more irreverent. I would just say that because the memory fades, the interpretation of the event changes colors.
Mm.
That certainly is the case as you go into 1938 with the Dorsey brothers, Down with the Old Canoe, where they're actually poking fun at the size of the vessel, referring to it as a canoe in the eyes of the Lord.
Right. And then we got this listener email. Let me read this to you. It's from Tom Patrick in Michigan. Tom writes, I was born in 1958 to a family of five children. Our mother taught us at an early age a song about the sinking of the Titanic. Although a tragic event, the version she taught us was quite boisterous. She considered it a drinking song that she often sang with her girlfriends and was heard often on and around the campus of the University of Michigan. We would sing it loud and raucous around the campfire and on various family outings. And we actually found a YouTube video. This is not Tom and his family. This is Camp Monahan in Saskatchewan, Canada, singing that song. Christopher, those folks seem to be having a ball.
Yeah, well, they've definitely taken William and Versie Smith's song and pushed it to the next level.
So that line that, in case you can't quite understand the words, it was sad when that great ship went down, which is the recurring line that we heard in the William and Versie Smith song as well. So as you say, you know, when time passes, people look at it from different angles and stuff. Are you familiar with this Jamaican DJ named General Echo?
I just learned about him 10 minutes ago.
Well, yesterday, as soon as we mentioned at the end of the show that we were going to do this today, the filmmaker Jonathan Demme called and said, you have to play this song by General Echo. It's called Titanic.
He's a lucky thing me granny did sick. He's a lucky thing me granny did sick. I wish you would have sink in a Titanic. I wish you would have sink in a Titanic. Strain her if she couldn't go on the ship. She strain her if she couldn't go on the ship. So she sent for the doctor and him give her injection, but he couldn't solve the solution. Grandma sick in bed. She sent for the doctor. The doctor said,
Grandma, you are very sick. You cannot go on the Titanic ship.
It's a lucky thing me granny did sick. Say, it's a lucky thing me granny did sick. I wish she would have sink in a Titanic.
It's a lucky thing my granny got sick, so she couldn't go on the Titanic. That is General Echo from Jamaica. That might be the only General Echo we could actually play on a family show, by the way. from 19...
It gives new meaning to the smoke clearing after the Titanic was down.
Christopher King's on the line with us from Virginia. He's a Grammy Award-winning engineer and the producer of People Take Warning, Murder Ballads, and Disaster Songs, 1913 to 1938. And certainly the Titanic disaster for 100 years has inspired films and plays and books and, yes, songs, and many of them in the African-American song tradition, it seems, Christopher.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how you could explain it. Certainly, I think there was an equal distribution between the white hillbillies, say, and the black bluesmen of the South, but it seems as if the black bluesmen of the South had a particularly creative license with the notion of the Titanic.
Mm-hmm. And in 1929, the street preacher Blind Willie Johnson recorded a song called God Moves on the Water, and this appears on the People Take Warning set.
Year of 1912, April the 14th day, great Titanic shall not bring, people that running free, God moan, and the people that running free, because who had been watching, stay for they were tied. When they heard the great excitement, many gunshots were fired. God moan, and the people that run and pray. Captain Smith gave orders, women and children praise. Man had a life of a letter, man had a life of crush. God moan, and more, and the people that run and pray.
That is Blind Willie Johnson, who I inadvertently put, Christopher King, on your three CD set. God Moves on the Water, a 1929 song, which is actually not in People Take Warning, but there are plenty of disaster songs about the Titanic in the set that Christopher King has produced. And what about, you know, you mentioned before this guy Rabbit Brown.
Oh yeah, Richard Rabbit Brown. He was I think in retrospect he's a very unusual character, but at the time he was very common. He was a songster who did not necessarily stick with the blues. He did anything and everything that would draw a crowd, and with that a nickel or a dime. And so when he was recorded in New Orleans, he was from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He composed this beautiful elongated three chord ballad, the sinking of the Titanic. And as he tells the story, both narrative as well as some judgmental aspects inserted, he then breaks into this beautiful solo of the song when the ship was going down. They said that Nearer My God to Thee was being played. Mm-hmm. And so he breaks into this very beautiful chordal version of that song.
Yeah, and that's a myth that has pretty well been dispelled at this point, that the band
right.
played Nearer My God to Thee. But there are a couple of, and that General Echo song that we heard, if we had heard the beginning of it, he actually starts it off with a very kind of sarcastic Nearer My God to Thee, just like
right.
chanting the name of the song. Was Rabbit Brown white or black?
He was black.
Now, this raises an interesting point, which is that blacks were not allowed on the Titanic, right?
That would be something I wouldn't be able to comment on. I mean, I would assume if they were English citizens being transported to the United States, then there would have been no reason to prevent them. But that's actually something I wouldn't be able to speak to.
Yeah, seems to be, again, a pretty well-documented thing about the Titanic. So it just, you know, it's striking how much the African-American music community responded to the Titanic disaster, like this guy, Richard Rabbit Brown.
So they stood out on that sinking deck, and it was all in great despair. You know, accidents may happen most any time, and we know not when and where. The music played as they went down on that dark blue sea. And you could hear the sound, that familiar hymn, singing there, oh my God, to be. Slipping there, oh my God. white form to sing. Yes, my soul shall be down Pharaoh.
That is Richard Rabbit Brown and the sinking of the Titanic from 1927, and again invoking the song Nearer My God to Thee, which according to myth is the song the band would have played when the ship was sinking. Christopher King's on the line. His set is called People Take Warning, a collection of disaster songs. And actually, Vic from Manhattan has called in with a vague memory of another Titanic song. Vic?
Yeah, it's the Ballad of the USS Titanic, and it's a song about a ship made of good Italian wood, good Italian steel. Folks said it would never go down, but it did anyway. And I can't remember the guy who sang it, but it was from back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Where'd you hear it?
Pardon me?
Where did you hear it?
I think I probably heard it on FM radio a long time ago. And I have a copy of the LP, but that's, you know, someplace put away.
Christopher, I know what Vic is talking about is well after the time period of your set, but you ever hear that thing? You ever hear that?
There are numerous instances of people recording Titanic songs in the 60s and the 70s, including Mike Seeger of the new Lost City Ramblers.
Right,
cover version.
Well, for some of the vintage Titanic stuff, you can go to Christopher King's collection, People Take Warning, Murder Ballads and Disaster Songs from 1913 to 1938. He's been on the line with us from Charlottesville, Virginia. And Christopher, nice speaking with you again. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on, John.
And that's going to do it for today, but tomorrow we have more about the Titanic centennial as we share some interesting ways that New York City is marking the event. In the background, you're actually hearing Bee Gees star Robin Gibb and his son RJ and their recent work called The Titanic Requiem that was premiered this Tuesday. Tomorrow as well, we have a visit from Questlove, drummer from The Roots, and the Malian guitarist Vieux Farka Touré and the Israeli pianist and composer Idan Reichel bring their blend of West African, Middle Eastern, Caribbean, and rock to our studio for a live performance. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Amy Pearl and Gina Gildasis. I'm John Schaefer. Join us again tomorrow for another Soundcheck.